Rainmaker FM. You're listening to The Digital Entrepreneur, the show for folks who want to discover smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital goods and services. This podcast is a production of Digital Commerce Institute, the place to be for digital entrepreneurs. For more information, go to rainmaker.fm/digital commerce. That's rainmaker.fm/digital commerce.
Welcome to The Digital Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Sean Jackson. And on today's show, I want to talk to you about value. For most people, the term value has a tangible financial meaning. The value of your home, or the value of your possessions, or maybe even the value of your stock portfolio. But there is an intangible understanding of value as well. The value of our contributions to our family, our friends, our community. And the idea of value takes on special meaning for online entrepreneurs. The value we provide to our customers and clients, the feeling of value from what we contribute online, and of course, the value of our online reputation. But there's also another form of value for us, the revenue and income we generate from all that online work. For entrepreneurs, especially in the online space, much of our sense of value in life comes from the operation of our business. And this is why selling your business can be a very scary proposition. Why? Because much of our identity is manifested in that online effort. And the thought of selling that identity can be terrifying. But it doesn't have to be. A case to point. A good friend of mine recently sold his online business after almost 10 years of running it. And his business was successful, not only helping him pay for his children's education and affording a prosperous lifestyle, it also made him a notable figure in his industry. But after several years, he got tired of running the business. He was tired of dealing with the stress of growing it, the cash flow issues that would come up from time to time, the stress of managing people, including his customers and his employees. Sure, he had handled the ebbs and flow of his business for many years, but that responsibility was weighing heavily on his mind. So he decided to sell his business, and that was when he got really worried. Sure, he would be able to make a good amount of money from the sale, but then what? He was young and not ready to retire. What would he do next? And also, his primary source of income would be gone. How was he going to take care of his family for the decades to come? And lastly, his whole online identity was tied directly to his business. Would he lose his online reputation because he was no longer an active player in that industry? But at the urging of his wife, he pushed through these feelings and was able to sell his online business at a good price. And to his surprise, he found new opportunities very quickly that got him excited for the future. In his case, he got the job of a lifetime with a large corporation, something he would never have considered as a possibility as an entrepreneur. As he told me the story of the sale of his business and his employment, I questioned him about the whole process. You see, as he explained to me, his old business was just one chapter in the book of his life. He was excited to start a new chapter, and probably in a few years, start another one, returning to his entrepreneurial roots with more money and experience. I know running an online business can be an all-consuming aspect of your life, and the idea of parting with it can be terrifying. And the truth is that most online entrepreneurs may be better off keeping that business running, affording them the freedom and rewards that are directly returned from their effort. But at the very least, understanding how an online business can be sold is an important part of truly understanding the value of what you have created. On today's show, we have a very special guest who has helped hundreds of online entrepreneurs sell their business. So if you've ever flirted with the idea of selling, or just want to know what the process is like, or even how much your business is worth, then you will find that today's episode may help you unlock the true value of your efforts. So stay tuned.
Hey, my name is Brian Gardner, and I am the creator of StudioPress, the first premium marketplace for WordPress themes. When I created StudioPress, I could never imagine that more than 200,000 WordPress site owners would use StudioPress to build some of the most elegant and inspiring WordPress sites on the web. And I am not just talking about the numerous large companies that use it. Tens of thousands of food bloggers, podcasters, affiliate marketers, real estate agents, photographers, and many more have created some of the most compelling mobile responsive websites using StudioPress. But that is not all. To make it easy for you to create a compelling WordPress site, we have introduced StudioPress Sites, a turnkey simple method to create and grow your WordPress site. StudioPress Sites includes many of our most popular WordPress themes, with unique SEO tools and plugins all integrated on our high-performance, secure, and actively managed hosting infrastructure. So when you are ready to take your WordPress site to a new level without the worry or hassle of less robust solutions, then I hope you will visit StudioPress.com. Over 200,000 bloggers and webmasters trust StudioPress for their WordPress site, and we work hard every day to earn it.
Welcome back from the break. And on today's show, we are honored to be joined by Mark Doust, founder and CEO of Quiet Light Brokerage, a firm that specializes in helping online entrepreneurs sell their web-based business. Now, Mark, you started this business back in 2007. So I guess my first question is, how's it been going since then?
It's been a roller coaster, for sure. We've been doing this since 2007. And I got to say, the last 5 years have been just really, really good. A nice growing economy helps. Over the past 10 years, you know, I don't know exactly how many number of deals we've done because I didn't keep great records at the beginning of this business. But it's somewhere around 700 deals total, well over $100 million of total transactions closed on behalf of our clients. Just in the past year, where, you know, again, we have better numbers, we do between 30 and 40 transactions per year on an average of about $20 million per year. Wow. Last year and this year, we're going to do about the same of that, maybe a little bit up from that this year. So, yeah, it's been good. It's definitely been an interesting progression over the past 10 years.
Yeah, and that's, I think, because obviously the web is more matured now than it was back when even you started, and more people are seeing the viability of building a web-based business, whether it is to sell, you know, e-commerce style transactions or digital goods or just to make money from advertising, etc. Certainly the popularity and growth of it is matured over the years, so I would expect there would be a lot of people doing it. But here's the real question, Mark. Mm-hmm. Why should anyone consider selling all that work that they just went through? I mean, if you think about it, and I'm sure you can share with us, I would think a lot of people who come to you, this is probably a core part of their revenue that they earn, you know, how they live. Why do they want to kind of give that up to go and sell it? What are the factors in the market that are leading people to say, yeah, now it's time to sell?
Well, my answer might actually surprise you a bit. And I'm going to tell you that if you have a really good business that's generating revenue, provides a good lifestyle for you, you probably shouldn't sell it.
Oh, my word.
I know that it's a little counterintuitive because I make my money off people making that decision every day. Financially speaking, yeah, you can get a nice financial windfall when you sell. But financially speaking, if you hang on to a business for the long term, you actually get more value out of it. So I'm not going to sit here and tell your listeners that selling is always the best financial decision. It's not. But where is a good decision and where people should consider selling their business is when other factors start to come into the equation, right? Why do people sell their business, their online business, after putting in all that work and setting up something that's good? Well, the landscape shifts in their life in some way, whether that be another opportunity they want to pursue, time, maybe they're bored or burnt out, or maybe, you know, bigger life issues come into the picture. If that's the scenario that somebody's facing, then selling becomes a good option because you can pull value out of your business, take the money off the table there, and be able to attack whatever other issues you might have that are even making you think about not doing business in the same way. So again, I know that's a little counterintuitive for me to say that, but I'd be lying to your audience if I were to say anything other than that.
And, you know, I also think there's some other trends that are occurring because obviously our population is getting older, right? And I'm curious, are you seeing more demand for purchasing a website business out there because people are looking to start their second career, if you will, and instead of building it from scratch, they'd rather buy it? What is the role of financing now? Has the financial landscape changed so much that now there's money to actually do this? Talk a little bit more on the demand side for, you know, people wanting to buy these web-based businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So the demand has steadily increased, and it's over the past 10 years, it's changed and it's fluctuated as it would with any industry. And what I like to describe to people is it's become more intelligent. The money in this industry has become more intelligent as well. People know what to buy. To your question as to are people buying these businesses as second careers? Absolutely. That's a very common scenario. Well, we'll deal with buyers who they've been in manufacturing all their lives, or they've been, you know, a CFO of a corporate major corporation for the past 20 years, and now they want to do something different. They want that lifestyle that you can get with an online business, and they want some of that upside potential as well. And for a lot of the time that I've owned Quiet Light, being able to buy an online business has been somewhat out of reach, right? Because not many people had access to $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 or seven figures in order to do some of the acquisitions that we facilitate. But what's really helped over the past probably 3 or 4 years is the SBA guidelines on borrowing funds for an online business have really become a little bit more well-defined and a bit looser so that you can actually borrow funds from SBA to do an acquisition. And that's really made some of these acquisitions more accessible to a lot of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that I think really blew me away. In fact, I ran into Quiet Light because I was searching about this topic and I saw the article that you published on your site about it. And I was like, holy cow. So I went and researched it further. The SBA has now increased their amount of from, I think, 1 million to 5 million now. It's still 20% down or 25% down, right? So if you have $1 million acquisition, if you have 200,000, you could potentially get the rest financed with the SBA, right?
It's actually even less than that. They only want the buyer to put in 10%.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. So you could, in theory, do that with $100,000 and then have the rest of that. They'll still only limit it at 80%. The seller has to make up the difference there in seller financing. Absolutely. And for people that don't know, you know, when we had the Great Recession back in 2009 and 2010, SBA guidelines got super restricted. They pulled back on their guidelines really, really heavily and said there will be no lending on goodwill, which is basically all an online business is, right?
Right.
It's classified in accounting parlance as goodwill financing. They put a limit of $200,000 on that. So you couldn't get a loan for more than $200,000 on goodwill. So that basically wiped out any sort of lending in this industry at all. And most banks wouldn't even touch an online business. Now, I mean, most of our, now it's probably about a little more than half of our deals are done with SBA financing. And I actually just did an acquisition myself with an SBA loan. So it's definitely opened up quite a bit of capital for people that want to do these acquisitions. And frankly, from just a leveraging standpoint of being able to buy a business with little money down and let that business pay for itself, boy, it's a really good deal.
Absolutely. And I think that really blew me away because I could see the fact that more people wanted to have that either second career or to augment their lifestyle with a web-based business, and the money to finance that was now readily available primarily through financial sources like the SBA. So I think, you know, it's a perfect tsunami. All right, you've got me convinced, Mark. I want to go sell my website business now. Talk to me about how I should think through this process. And specifically, what should I be doing right now? Whether I want to sell it tomorrow or I want to sell it in a couple of years, how should I be working my business right now to make sure it's attractive to the people that may want to buy it in the future?
Sure. So I'm going to start very generic and kind of high level, and then we'll get to a couple specifics that people should really be thinking about. And you should be thinking about this stuff ideally at least 12 months before you want to sell. The more, the better. Like if you can do this 24, 36 months before, or even from the startup phase, do that. But when considering about considering to sell a business down the road, you have to think in terms of what do buyers want? What do people who are acquiring businesses want? At the end of the day, it's not that complex. They want a return on their investment. If I'm going to invest $1 million in an online business, I sure want to make more than $1 million back within a reasonable period of time. And so the first thing that you need to do if you're thinking about selling in a year, 2 years, is start to focus on what does your business generate in terms of profits and earnings. This is how most businesses are valued. They're valued as a multiple of their earnings. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that valuation process, so it's not as simple as that. But that is probably the most important thing that you need to focus on first and foremost. Getting that timing right, making sure that you're not selling at a point in time when maybe you're making major changes in your business and you have lots of expenses going through because of those changes, which artificially makes your earnings lower. Those sort of considerations do factor in as well. So understanding the timing that goes in. But that earnings, the earnings will be the first thing that you want to look at and making sure that you kind of time things up right there. Outside of that, what I tell people to focus on all the time is I call them the four pillars of web business values. And those are risk, growth, transferability, and your documentation. Risk is something where you've got to take a look at your business and ask yourself the question critically and as objectively as possible, what could kill this business overnight? What is going to absolutely destroy this business if it comes true? If you're an e-commerce business, do you have just one vendor? That would be a potential area of weakness. Are you only relying on Facebook advertising for new clients? That's a potential risk that you need to start to diversify from. So identify the risks in your business, diversify, have backup plans if nothing else. And if you can utilize some of these backup plans, then do so. Growth would be the second thing. Make sure that you have at least signs of growth, a good 10 to 15% year-over-year growth. It is a really good sign for buyers. They love that sort of historical growth. If you have other areas that are natural areas that you can grow the business, but maybe you don't want to pursue them just yet, at least test them out and find out just how realistic they are. The more real the growth prospects are, the more value you're going to get out of your business. Transferability, make sure that somebody else can run the business for you. Don't make yourself so integral to the business that nobody else could run that. And you have to think about that. If I were to outsource my job completely, what would I need to do in order to outsource my job completely? And could somebody run this business successfully without me being involved day to day? Have that sort of question in mind. Obviously, buyers want to run a business without having to go through 5 months of training and running it. And so make that as easy as possible. I really urge people, write down your standard operating procedures, and if you don't have them, put them together. Write down organization charts. Do the things that maybe you don't need to do for yourself, but would need to do for somebody else. It's a really good exercise, and it's kind of eye-opening. The last pillar is documentation. I can't even tell you how much value this can add to your business, and it's 100% within your control. Have your financials in order. Make sure that they're clean, they're separated books, and then, like I just said, standard operating procedures, document your business. These sort of things make a big difference when you actually go to sell your business. They're psychological triggers for buyers, where buyers are, they're motivated by wanting to buy a business and the opportunity, but they're demotivated by the fear of what's going to go wrong or what am I missing. If you can present them with a really well-documented business, then that fear of what am I missing just completely vanishes because there's nothing there. So I've seen some significant value increases just by clean documentation alone.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very important point because there is a lot of fear from the buyer side that they don't know what they don't know, right? And so if you're giving them almost a transparent look into your business, well documented, then it helps alleviate that fear because at the end of the day, you know, this is their personal money. Even if they're borrowing it from someplace, it's still their money on the line. And there's that fear that I don't know about this. But if you're documenting it, if you're showing it, then it's builds that credibility, if you will, that this is a real business and I am going to make sure as the seller, you have everything you need to succeed. Right?
Absolutely. 100%. And I'll add this as a footnote to it. I fall victim to the same thing. if you do these exercises, you're going to have a couple of eye-opening moments about your own business. When you actually do sit down and keep, take a look at your financials and see, are they really organized? Do I really have my expenses categorized the right way? Am I mixing things together? When you actually go through and start to separate things, you'll have some insights in your business. When you actually map out your organization chart, what does your business look like from an organization standpoint? A lot of people do this exercise like, okay, I have to do it. And then they do it and they say, wow, this is really interesting. I've had so many people tell me that after, where I feel like I'm giving them homework at first and they're kind of begrudgingly doing it. And then later on they do it and they say, wow, this was a really good exercise. Mm-hmm. You talked about selling in a year or 2 years. I'm not going to lie, this is a lot of work. So doing this now and getting started now means that you're able to spread that work out over maybe a few months, as opposed to trying to cram everything together the day that you want to sell.
Right.
That's the way that you get mistakes and all sorts of bad things happen from that.
And I think part of it, and to your point about prepping early from the very beginning, even if you're thinking maybe this is a possibility in the future or just starting out, I mean, to me, it's very simple. If you get a folder collection together and you have your legal, your accounting, your contracts, your technical, just organize it at that level from day one. So as you are coming into your email and you're getting your email, you have a categorization that follows the same thing that's on your hard drive or on your Box or Dropbox account, so that when people are saying, oh, what about that contract with your hosting provider, right? Where is it? You say, oh, it would be in my contracts folder, because that's where I dump all of my stuff together. So little simple organization techniques, both in your email and in how you store your files, whether it's on the cloud or on your computer, could make digging all that stuff up when the time comes a lot easier, right?
Absolutely. One of my brokers, Joe Valley, sold his business through Quiet Light Brokerage before he joined our team. And he often likes to tell people that he feels like he worked harder trying to sell his business than he ever did trying to run the business. And a lot of people have that sense, because when you get into the process of selling, you don't understand just how many documents are required and how much information somebody who doesn't know your business is going to need to decide, am I going to stroke a check for six figures, seven figures to this person that I probably have not met in person, I'm just talking to over the phone? There's a lot of documentation that needs to happen there, and a large exchange of information. Getting that stuff organized up front, it really makes that a lot easier to get done, and it does add value to the business, as well as those other things. Trending is important. Making sure that you get the timing right, and those other pillars I talked about are also important. I'd like to focus on the documentation because it's completely under your control.
Right. The other thing that's also under your control, and I think this is probably, as a finance guy, the biggest mistake I see most business owners do. They don't realize they actually have two sets of books. And I'm not talking about, the shady things. But there's a set of books that you use to run your business, right? Here's my revenue. Here's my cost of sales. Here's my expenses. Here's my operating income, depreciation, et cetera. But they're very detailed, right? They will probably go into a lot of categorization to say this expense is for this area, et cetera. But then there are the books that you show to outside parties, which should obviously reflect back to your operating books. But the books that you show to the outside parties may not necessarily have as much detail up front, and may also add back in other costs and expenses that were maybe one time in nature. Because I know in your business, seller discretionary earnings, which anyone who's thinking of selling business, SDE is a very important part of the financial side, does add back in a lot of those, kind of crazy expenses when you decided to go to Hawaii and write it off, right? It does look at it. And so talk just briefly about when you're looking at your financials, the way you operate your business versus the financials you present, and how you sometimes reconcile those two to make sure that when you're showing the seller discretionary earnings, you can back it up and present it in the best light possible. Since obviously, as you pointed out, valuation is tied to those earnings.
Yeah, and this is a pretty big topic, so I'll try and keep it somewhat simple, because we could talk about this for a long time. But you're right, seller's discretionary earnings is the basis for valuations. And when we're looking at the value of a company, we're looking at your discretionary earnings over the last 12 months, and we're multiplying it by a number, right? So this is a really key number. And if you run your QuickBooks report, you won't find a report for discretionary earnings. So it begs the question, well, what is this number in the first place? I'll tell you the technical definition of it, and then I'll tell you the way that I like to describe it. Mm-hmm. So the technical definition is the pre-tax, pre-interest profits before non-cash expenses, one-time investments, one-owner's benefits, and other adjustments made that are for non-related expenses and income. Right? That's a laundry list. The easier definition, in my opinion, is circular. Seller's discretionary earnings are the amount of earnings a business owner has to spend at their discretion. Right. So how much money does your business make in a year as a business owner that you get to spend at your discretion? There are certain costs with your business that you really don't have the discretion. You have to advertise. You have to have a merchant account. You have to have certain costs, hosting costs. These are there and everybody knows that this is a core part of your business. But as a business owner, what you pay yourself or how you pay yourself, well, that's discretionary, right? How you set up your business from a standpoint of reducing your tax burden, there's a lot of discretionary choices that you make there. And so when we're doing evaluation on a business, we usually start with that formal set of books that you talk about, and then we'll go through and we'll take out those true one-time expenses. We'll take out the owner benefits of one owner because how you pay yourself is a discretionary item. And we arrive at this bottom line number called seller's discretionary earnings. And this is a really key concept to understand and something that I would actually recommend working through somebody like myself or another broker about a year to 18 months before you decide to sell. Because what we can do is we can show you what your seller's discretionary earnings is now, and then we might be able to find some areas in your business where there's these gray area discretionary expenses. So I'll give you a very quick example. I was going through this exercise with a client years ago, and he saw me adding back the expenses. And he said, oh, I didn't know we could do this. He said, you know, over the past year, I spent $90,000 in AdWords and it didn't do anything for me at all. Like, I didn't make any money. So we should just add that back because we won't have that cost going forward. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't add back a failed ad campaign. That's not how the calculation works. But if he had done this a year earlier, he could have said, you know what, this ad campaign isn't doing anything for me. I'm going to stop the experiment now,
right,
and save that money. And then he would have gotten credit for that. So those are the sort of things that you can really do a year, 18 months before that adds significant value. He would have added about $300,000 in value to his business if he had done that.
Right. And I think that's crucial for everyone who's listening to understand that the valuation metrics that firms of this type will use will be looking at that. So that's a very important part of the process to understand that just because you decided to pay for X and lowered your earnings down by it, there are possibilities to improve it. So when you hear multiples of 2X, 3X, 4X, 5X of earnings, realize that may not be the same earnings you're looking at in the books that you're using to operate your business. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an open secret that every business owner reduces their tax burden in ways that are completely legitimate and above board.
Right.
The SBA recognizes this. You know, when you go through an SBA loan, they're going to take a look at things and they're going to do add backs as well. So
right.
The question is, how do you go about that in the right way? And what are buyers going to accept? And what's the SBA going to accept?
So let's talk about the right way, because there are some gotchas in this thing, right? Because in the perfect world, right, you would have transparent sellers. You would have, you know, willing buyers who have the money, they've got their financing, and everything would be perfect. And you really wouldn't never need to use someone like you. Because there would be all this transparency and openness and a defined process. The reality is that's not the case. So I want to go through a couple of things to end our interview together on some of the gotchas and things to look for. So for sure. Example, I actually many years ago had a web-based business. I put it up for sale and found a buyer. And that buyer was making all sorts of crazy promises. And yes, no problem. He met my price. I mean, I was excited. And I asked for an earnest money check. And when the earnest money check bounced, it got to me and I said, maybe there's a problem here that I didn't realize. So let's talk about some of those things, because I do think, you know, much like when you sell anything, you not only need to be transparent, but be careful of whom you sell to, because they may not be as transparent as you are. So let's go through some of those things that you would recommend people really look out for in the entire process.
Sure. So dealing with buyers, like in your case, obviously you don't know who you're dealing with. So many times we're just voices on the telephone to each other, and that's about it. Asking for an earnest check is a pretty easy way for you to start to vet out some of the non-serious buyers and the people that are just mining for information. That would be one thing. The other thing that I recommend to people is ask for a background check. Now, if you do this, understand that they might ask for one on you as well, and you have to be willing to do that. But we offer this as kind of a standard question that we ask sellers and buyers alike during the process. You know, are you willing to submit yourself to a background check? And from time to time, we've had people say no, and then we have a private conversation and find out why, and there's some legitimate reasons not to, but at least that stuff comes to the surface. As far as you know, what's going on there? Why don't they want that background check to be done? Obviously, using an intermediary like our firm or another firm, one of the big advantages that we are able to provide is that we work with these buyers on an ongoing basis. A lot of the buyers we work with, we've worked with before. They've shown good faith before. And there are some buyers, frankly, that we know of that are bad apples. There's one person that we've had to deal with. They've used multiple aliases, different names, to be able to try and do things. They even use the alias of the local sheriff in their hometown to try and dupe us. And you know what? They've gotten close to being able to do it a couple of times. But those sort of people, again, despite rigorous checks on our side, you know, they've gotten through a little bit. But then we're able to shut that down. And now we have record of that. You know, somebody who's just putting their site up on BizBuySell or, you know, a site like that, you don't know these people and you don't know who you're dealing with. So using an intermediary can be a way to filter out a lot of those bad actors as well.
Yeah, and I think that's crucial as well, because there are so many things in the actual process that a first-time seller or even someone who sold before may not know. And I personally believe you should always have an intermediary. You need someone to be the good cop or bad cop to whatever role you're playing to help make sure not only on valuation, but also deal structure, you know, the terms of it, you know, the holdback periods, the warranties, the guarantees, of course, during the due diligence process, when they're trying to validate all the things that you said, and they're looking at the books and saying, well, why did you know, add that back in, et cetera. So I'm a big believer in having intermediaries in any process, because when you don't, the price you pay could be amplified beyond what you expected and may lead to not only a busted deal, but busting your business in the process. So, Mark, you've got me convinced. I can't thank you enough for being here. What is the best way for people who are interested in this? Because I figure something like you is expensive. I mean, is there a big laborious process to contacting you? What is the best way for people to engage with you?
It's actually pretty easy. Just go to our website, go to quietlightbrokerage.com. You can either fill out the contact form, or you can fill out the sell form, which is just a valuation request where we'll take a look at your business. We don't charge anything to take a look at your business and do a valuation up front. We don't ask you to sign any contracts. It's a chance to get to know us, our process a little bit better, and for us also to get to know you a little bit better to see if it's a business that we want to work with down the road. So if anyone wants to have a valuation request done where we take a look, tell you what your business is worth right now, and maybe identify some things that you want to work on, just head on over to the website, quietlightbrokerage.com, fill out the form, or just there's a phone number on there as well. You can call us. We'd be more than happy to talk to you about that or any general questions as well. I'm also on Twitter at Mark Douse, and you can also find me on LinkedIn at Mark Douse as well.
Mark, thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we will be right back after this short break. Hey, everyone. This is Sean Jackson, the host of The Digital Entrepreneur, and I want to ask you a simple question. What is your business framework for selling digital goods online? Now, if the question perplexes you, don't worry, you are not alone. Most people don't realize that the most successful digital entrepreneurs have a framework or a general process for creating and selling their digital goods in the online space. And one of the best free resources is Digital Commerce Academy. Digital Commerce Academy combines online learning with case studies and webinars created by people who make a living selling digital goods online. And the best part is that this material is free when you register. Are you interested in joining? Well, I'll make it easy for you. If you're listening to the show on your phone, and are in the continental United States, I want you to send a text message to 313131 with the keyword digits, D-I-G-I-T-S. And when you send that text message, we will send you a link to the registration form right to your phone. Are you outside the United States? Don't worry. Just send us an email to digits@rainmaker.fm. Either way, we'll send you a link to the registration form so that you can sign up for free for Digital Commerce Academy. And as a special bonus, we will also subscribe you to our newsletter when you text or email us so that you can stay informed with the latest insights from the show. And don't worry, we respect your privacy and we will not share your email or phone number, and you can easily unsubscribe at any time. So if you want to start building or improving your framework for selling digital goods online, then please send a text to 313131 with the keyword digits, or send us an email at digits@rainmaker.fm. You won't be disappointed. Welcome back from the break. And at this point in the show, I generally recommend a tool or a book or something that I think can help you in growing and expanding your online effort. But today, I'm going to ask a favor. If you've gotten to this point in the show, pretty sure that you're a loyal listener. And I'm asking a favor. I would appreciate it if you would take the time to leave us a review, either on iTunes or on Google or wherever you're consuming this from. I know, I'm asking a lot, but it would really help me to get your feedback on what I'm doing right or what I'm doing wrong. So when you have a moment, pull out that phone or go to your desktop and just give a simple review of the show. It doesn't have to be great, just has to be honest. And at the end of the day, it will help me so I bring the programming that you need to succeed. That's it for the show today. And as always, we will be back next week with another episode of The Digital Entrepreneur. Have a great week.